You are listening to the sermon podcast from the pulpit of Brookside Baptist Church. For more information, please visit us on the web at brooksidebaptist.org. Now, here's today's message.
Well, I have 10 minutes to go through four chapters of Judges. I think they played a joke on me when they put that all the presentations tonight, but it is valuable to hear what God has been doing with people that go out from our midst and what God's been doing around the world. So I recognize that. I have I'll waste another minute on the story here. When I was at Dallas Seminary working after I'd finished my degree, I audited a course in Old Testament narrative preaching because I was really bad at that. And for my final sermon, I got up there, and at Dallas, you can't use notes at all. And I stood up there, and all of a sudden, I went blank. And I just gave my main idea, and I repeated a few reasons why I thought that main idea was found in the passage. Like, I repeated it four or five times. And then I sat down, and it was about a five-minute sermon. So I should be good tonight. Actually, I put days and days and days of research into this. I'm so excited about, so disappointed about the life of Samson, but I'm excited about the opportunity to present him to you. So instead, I've been scrapping all of my notes, trying to figure out how to fit this all in within the time I have. I don't know where I'm getting all the air pops, but if you'll bear with it, I'll do my best to speak clearly here. Samson is found in Judges chapter 13, 14, 15, and 16. The most amount of chapters devoted to a single judge. In fact, if you study, which I recommend especially after tonight, that you take some time on your own to study the book of Judges, but particularly the life of Samson, it's a very, very, very interesting character study to do. And I'll just cut to the chase of it, and as people say, sometimes my teaching ends up, I'm a dump truck, and I'm unloading on you now. We've got 8 minutes, all right? Here we go. I do want to respect the nursery workers. Some of you are just like, come on, go a half hour, I don't care. But I do want to respect that. If you study the book of Judges, particularly Samson's life, I want you to consider the women in Samson's life. The use of women in the narrative of any of the scriptures is very key and crucial, usually to the understanding of a story, because God loves to confound the culture and sometimes the situations by putting the women in situations where they sometimes end up in a hero position, or sometimes they become the problem in the story. And in Samson's life, there are four women. Maybe you didn't remember that. One is his mom. The second one is a woman from a town just down the valley from where he grew up. Samson grew up in a little city called Zora in the Sorek Valley, one of the key and crucial valleys to get to the Israelite highlands, the hill country, whereas the Philistines lived down on the plains. And so he was brought up in a very strategic spot by God, because interestingly, as the 12 cycles of sin go on in the book of Judges, where the Israelites were unfaithful to God, this particular cycle of sin, what we find in Judges chapter 13, now the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord, so that the Lord gave them into the hands of the Philistines. And there was a certain man of Zorah, the family of the Danites, whose name was Manoah, and his wife was barren and had borne no children. Then the angel of the Lord appears to this woman, and the angel of the Lord lets her know that her plight has been heard by God, and that she is going to bear a son. And that son will be a miracle child, well, because she was barren, and that son will be a Nazirite, a consecrated, devoted individual to God, even while the baby is in her womb. By the way, what an excellent passage for even for even a little bit more support for explaining the fact that it is a child, that God recognizes that it's a child within a woman's womb. Because the woman, Manoah's wife, had to actually change her diet and her lifestyle in order to become consecrated so that that child would not be defiled. And in the time we have, what I want to really focus on is what is really the key to the story of Samson. And that is, as I was mentioning, if you look at the four women in Samson's life, and if you look at the four women in Samson's life, you've got the mother, who seems to be a very godly woman. In fact, the angel of the Lord talks to her. She then talks to her husband, and they ask for another repeat visit from the angel, and it seems as though she keeps the requirements that he sets on her, and if you look at some of the ways she interacts with her husband, it seems that she's a woman that thinks clearly. She uses wisdom and logic. She's portrayed as someone that actually has it together. And then Samson, and we believe when you look at all the chronology of things, at 19 years old, that's when God started to move or stir in the heart of Samson. That's what the word in verse 25 of chapter 13. The Spirit of the Lord began to stir or to thrust or to impel or to beat persistently in Samson's heart something. Unfortunately, Samson then in Judges 14, chapter 1, finds a girl that he thinks is very attractive in a Philistine town just 5 miles down the valley to the west in a little town called Timnah. And an account is given in Judges 14 that we don't have time for, but it's very interesting. In that particular account, what we find is Samson's character is revealed. First of all, he's hanging out in a Philistine town, which he shouldn't be doing as a good Israelite. He's supposed to be keeping separate from them. Second of all, he is impetuous on the visual lust that he has. He says, I want that woman for my wife. And third of all, he doesn't honor his parents as a 19-year-old. And they finally just give up to his pleas and his insistence, and they let him have her as his wife. They go down to Timnah to arrange the marriage. In the meantime, he, as he was going down with them, he stops in the vineyard. Now, as a Nazarite, one of the things that he was supposed to do was not to touch anything or to eat anything of the vine, whether it was grapes or to drink the wine. Interesting that he would be found in the vineyards. Next, it's also interesting that he be found in a Philistine town. It's also interesting then, as he was in the vineyards, a young lion comes out at him. We don't know how responsible he was for the situation. It sounds like, I don't think you could exactly run away from a lion, but a lion, by the way, is an unclean beast. A lion has paws, and according to the Levitical laws and the things that God set down, anybody that touches a pawed animal is considered unclean. Remember, the purpose of being a Nazarite was to be consecrated to the Lord and to be keeping yourself as clean as possible. And so he rips this lion in two because of his unusual strength that's symbolized by his Nazarite long hair. That was one of the requirements of being a Nazarite. And here's the thing. He goes down to Timnah. He meets this woman. He talks to her in verse 7. She looks good. He returns later to take her, and he stops by the carcass of that lion that he ripped apart. And sure enough, some bees had taken residence in there and made a little honeycomb. We assume that in that arid climate that the beast itself had dried out pretty quickly, and the bees were able to take residence there and make their honey. But he touches a dead animal. That's another violation of the Nazarite law. You don't touch anything that's dead, any dead carcasses whatsoever. And then if we want to list all the things that Samson did wrong, I've got 30 of them here, but we won't do that completely tonight. But I just want to also note that he rendered his parents unclean by giving them honey from the dead lion carcass. He most likely in his feasting, the word used for what he does when verse 10 of chapter 14, Samson made a feast there for the young men customarily did this. That is, they had a 7-day feast. And the word literally is drinking party. It was a celebration of the Philistines where they got drunk and they celebrated. And in fact, the Timnite woman provided 30 of her companions, her friends within the area to be his best men. And they were not good men. And so they have this battle of the wits, which is a very common practice in the ancient days, a test of wits it was kind of like their entertainment. And that's where Samson presents a riddle. That's where the Timnite woman pesters Samson so much that he gives her the answer. She gives away the answer. And that starts a chain of events that is just miserable. If you, by the way, take note of the word burn as used in Judges 14. Circle it every time you see it in Judges 14. It's very interesting. The men threaten to burn her and her family if she doesn't get the riddle from Samson. And then Samson's anger burned as he went up to his father's house. He left her on the 7th day of the feast, the day that was supposed to consummate the marriage after the 7 days of the bachelor party, of the drinking party. He leaves her at the altar because he's burning in his anger. And so who knows if they really talked about the whole situation. It's assumed, actually, that his wife probably did tell him, well, they pressured me. They said they'd burn everything. So you know what he does? He goes down to visit his wife, and he finds out that that wife was given away because the dad thought that Samson hated her. That word hate is divorced her, the way that it's used in that particular, that word in the Hebrew. And so then Samson in verse 4 of Judges chapter 15 does something very interesting. He catches 300 foxes, that is, or jackals. It most likely was jackals. The word in the Hebrew could be translated either of those. And foxes usually hunt and do things by themselves. But jackals go in large packs, so it's most likely that he was able to capture them in a larger pack. And what does he do? He ties their tails together in order to... There's all sorts of details that we don't have time for, but what he does is he burns the grain fields of the Philistines. He torches, and what happens is when those foxes go, or the jackals go through with the fire on their tails, attached to their tails, it burns up the shocks of and standing grain. That means the grain that had already been harvested and ready for threshing, as well as the stuff that hadn't yet been harvested. And then it says also along with the vineyards and the groves. Think about it. The grain is their food. The vineyard is their drink. That's wine. And the groves are usually groves of olive trees in that area, which is their fuel. Food, drink, fuel. Samson decimated the key aspects of their survival and also their economy. They were lividly mad. So what they did then is they go to Samson's former wife and they burn her and her dad to death. And then Samson, and then Samson struck them ruthlessly with a great slaughter, and then he hid out in a cave for a while. And then the people from a tribe just south of the Danites find him, and they say, what did you do to us? The Philistines are going to come. We're happy making everything, we're satisfied with the situation where the Philistines are oppressing us because we have peace right now. And Samson goes, fine, here, bind me. And he goes and is taken into custody. And the long story short is he ends up in an area, breaks the binds, picks up a fresh jawbone from a donkey. By the way, that's another unclean carcass item. And he kills all these Philistines. Interesting. If someone were to die in front of a Nazarite, what happens is you'd have to restart your whole Nazarite vow. There were laws in Numbers 6. So if you study the character study Samson, go look at also Numbers 6 and see how the two relate. Here's where I'm going to flip through all my pages of notes and go to the important part. Folks, as Samson was called to a Nazirite vow to be completely dedicated to God, and as he demonstrated, he took that lightly. He despised his calling from God. He was called to be separate and distinct, to be set apart not from stuff, but to the one who had a purpose and a plan for him, and that was to deliver the Israelites from the Philistines. And yet he did nothing to value that and to preserve that. Folks, we have been called to a similar type of a covenant, a vow. We have been redeemed by the God of the universe who came to die for our sins, to make us new creatures, to live in newness of life, and to be indwelled by his very supernatural spirit, God himself, within us, giving us unique abilities and, so to speak, powers. Though I can't rip carcasses and or lions in half and do amazing things like Samson did, the stuff that I can do with the spirit that has been given to me is only put into practice in as much as I'm living right with him. And as I see the condition of today's church, whether it's Brookside or any other church, I am very concerned that we take lightly the vow or the covenant relationship that we've come into with the Lord. He has called us to be separate, to be distinct, to be holy. That's what the word holy means, to be sanctified, to be set apart for a purpose. Every single one of you, regardless of your age, regardless of your background, regardless of any circumstance or situation in your life, you've been called to know what this word says, to know what God's heart is, what he holds near and dear to him, and what he absolutely is disgusted with and hates. And then he calls us, he says, because you've been redeemed for that, I want you to live in the like fashion as the one who I sent to be the ultimate example for you, Jesus Christ. And yet what I'm concerned about, as I just cut to the quick of it here, is I think our lives in general, I think each of us here in some way have taken lightly that covenant relationship. And you know how it's measured? You know how it's seen? By our entertainment choices, by our materialism, by the way we handle relationships within this building, as well as familial relationships with our family, even our sexual conduct, whether it's with our minds or with the instruments of computers or with actual other people that we have no business talking with or doing things with on a sexual basis. It's got to stop. Every bit of sin. Folks, his coming is soon. That was the message of John the Baptist. And as I conclude here, I want to remind us, in the time that we had here, the reason why we've been called is because he has something special he wants to do with each of you. And yet we live this life as if American Christianity is something we do and Sundays happen and we got to go to church or whatever. There's much more to it than that. He has indwelt us with the Spirit who helps us to live in every situation he puts us in, and he purposely puts us in very difficult situations, as he put Samson in very difficult situations, and he wants us to live in an exemplary way where the world looks at us and goes, wow, what is different? There's something unique. There's something supernaturally different about you. The only thing they saw for Samson was his strength. The fact that he could control a jawbone and his muscles, but he couldn't control his lusts and his passions, his mind. Did he really think that when he went down to Gaza, 37 miles southwest of the valley of Sorek, that he could hide his sin of going to a harlot down there? No, they knew who he was. The news got out. It's still with us today. Folks, there's nothing you can hide. It's not, nothing is worth violating the covenant that God has called you to, the new covenant, where Jesus Christ came to set you free from sin, to set you free from those attitudes and those ways of living that are so contrary to what his nature is. So as I cheated 10 minutes here, I want you to come away with this. God holds us accountable for what he has given us. And he has given us a responsibility, a calling, and he's given us the means necessary to live in that calling. And that's the Spirit within us, and that's the Word. If you are not regularly submitting yourself to God on a morning level, on an hourly level, saying, Lord, I can't do this. I can't talk to that person without thinking these things. I can't say things without having that bad attitude. I need your help. If you don't show that confession of dependence, you're missing it. If you don't get to know what he loves and what he hates, you're missing it. It's like you're somebody that's just following after the next prettiest Philistine woman. The next thing that this world has to offer, which isn't worth any of it.
Thank you for listening today. If you would like more information about the ministry of Brookside Baptist Church, please visit us on the web at brooksidebaptist.org. Thank you again for listening as we bring the Word of God to your life.